one of my teams asked me the other day, like, what did you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, well, I don't need to be, you know, a downer, but that really wasn't an option. Like, I could be a mom or maybe a teacher, right? And so now it's the world is opening, and just it was this legacy of business and professional career can be handed down from woman to woman. Like, that to me is amazing.
Today, we're talking with Gail Stout Perry, Partner and Strategy Services and ESG Executive at Credera, a global management and technology consulting firm focused on strategy transformation, data technology, and AI solutions for the clients they serve. In today's podcast, what you will learn is, what is it like to have to rebuild your personal brand? We also had a great conversation around ESG and what companies can be thinking about and how individuals can actually have an impact now. And finally, AI in our personal and professional lives. I really enjoyed the conversation with Gail, and I hope that you will too.
Run toward the unknown when you're riding the big wheel. You're not alone.
Gail, thank you so much for being here with us today. I am super excited to have you on, and boy, it was a journey even scheduling this podcast, wasn't it?
It was.
So I thought it would be great to just start by talking a little bit about your background. So you and I met probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe now it was. God, time goes by. And I was really, I was drawn to you because of your experience and your background and, of course, just your personality, but you've got an amazing background and a career journey that you've taken. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about that. And, you know, also a little bit about Credera, where you're working today.
Okay. Hard to summarize 30 years. Educationally, I'm an engineer. Back when girls didn't do such things, there was no ladies' room in the engineering building, and I also have an MBA. I've spent most of my career in consulting, and that's where I currently am. I'm a partner at Credera, which is a global management and technology consulting firm focused on strategy transformation, data technology, and of course, AI.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what brought you to Credera. So you just mentioned all this experience that you have, and I know you went from, you have been a consultant most of your life, but you're also engineer trained, and it would be great for people to just understand a little bit about your journey, like where you started that brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, you couldn't have planned it. It is a serpentine career path for sure. Was recruited out of engineering school into what is now Accenture to do something that I'd never heard of called management consulting. I did a few years at Lockheed Martin, and I was also a pre-sales engineer at a software company. So I consider that my foundational training, where I learned about business and systems and engineering and sales and processes. And then I became what is called a step out in my generation, because I also wanted to be a mom. And that was before the Family Medical Leave Act. And so maternity leave wasn't particularly common. And I also wanted to give my child what I had the benefit of. I had a stay-home mom, and I just couldn't imagine doing it any other way. So I had my daughter, and I stayed home with her for almost 5 years. And then I had needed to get back into the workforce. I wanted to get back into the workforce. But I think we've talked about this, Michelle. Like, she was born in 96. I had been in technology. The internet came along. Cell phones came along. You know, email. Everything had changed. Interface. I was like, oh my goodness, what do I do? So, and I also wanted to control my schedule. I wanted to have flexibility to be a great mom and to be there after school. And so, you know, I just did the natural thing. I started my own company. I say that very
natural.
I say that very flippantly. There was a lot of angst and tears and worry and not knowing how, and just kind of had to kind of step out and get started. And basically I was doing consulting work focused on the nonprofit sector in North Texas. I wasn't trying to grow my company. I was just to create work for myself and some income. And occasionally I got a little too successful and had to use contractors, but so then one of your, what do you call them, the big wheel moments was during this era. I laid eyes on a strategic plan for the first time that someone was presenting. And it was like the clouds opened up and the sun shined down on this document that encapsulated everything the organization was and was trying to do in a very simple, clear, actionable way. And I thought, this is it. I just fell in love. And that's how I made the pivot into strategy. And of course, with an engineer and an MBA, that I didn't realize those two things usually equal strategy. I learned that later, but that, so my mind was already kind of prepped for this sort of work. And then, so I went to work for Balanced Scorecard Institute for a decade. That was where all the interesting client stories come from, Michelle, you know about me. So because I was leading strategy workshops, or teaching strategy and organizations around the world for a decade, we wrote a textbook. And then internally, I was continuing to hone my operational skills, like reworking consulting, reworking sales and marketing, and, you know, expanding the international presence. And so all of these things just kind of like added up over 10 years. And the flexibility of being able to take my daughter with me on some of these amazing travels and have her be part of this. So it was just kind of the perfect blend of what I needed in that phase in my life.
That's pretty fantastic. I have a question for you about what was it like to just step out? And then, you know, what was it really like stepping back in? So I did the same thing. And, you know, it was hard because I had a global job that I really loved. The travel was immense. And I also made the choice for my children. And I stepped out a little longer than you did. And then you step back in and it's like, holy moly, because the world has changed. Yeah. What was, and for people that are doing that today, you can argue the world is changing even at a more rapid pace. So you made the decision to step out for your daughter and then step back in, right? The business world. But then ultimately you chose to start your own business. And what was that like for you? Because it was, you know, you're working in a corporate environment. You are already a professionally trained consultant, and now you are taking that big leap into owning your own business. So kind of the factors, the decision around that, you made it sound so easy. And I'm wondering if it really was that easy.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't easy. Stepping out was easy. I was really burned out. A lot of travel. I was never home, and been years of leaving on Sunday night, coming home on Friday night. You know how it is. You get Saturday at home to do your laundry and off you go again. So that wasn't particularly difficult. There was a lot of angst around how to get back into the workforce. I knew I didn't want to go on the road like that. I didn't see how I could do the things I'd been trained to do and be able to balance a life. I just couldn't see a way out. I looked at, maybe I could be a party planner. Maybe I could be a nanny.
Wow.
Maybe I could be a piano teacher. Maybe I could be, it was really a lot of circling. And just through conversations and kind of networking and talking to people, I found someone that said, I could use your help on something, right? And it's like, well, okay, I could do that on a contract basis. And it's like, okay, well, I could make this a business where I'm contracting, basically, and gaining skills and knowledge. I knew nothing about the nonprofit sector. While I was getting my MBA, I spent a few months working for a CPA firm, and I'd audited a few school districts. So I knew that. So I had to learn like a whole new language and just try to apply what I knew in my capability to think and to research. And, you know, I knew how to use a computer, right? So I could dial in, and I knew how to figure out how to surf this new thing called the internet and start to piece things together. So one of the first pieces of work I got, a client had been given a grant from the White House to do a study on the long-term impact of alcohol and drug abuse.
Wow.
I think that was the one, I may be misremembering, but I remember it was a White House grant. It was long-term impact, and it was like trying to link things together. And I was like, sure, I'm sure I can do that. So I didn't even know there was like the UCR, I was coming back to me slowly, like all these databases and people who keep these records. I'm just like figuring it out and, you know, calling up people and can you help me? And then I'm trying to piece together the data and then figuring out how to visualize it and create this storyline and then try to do it in a graphical way. And I am not graphical at all. And anyway, it came out. It was really nice. I mean, of course they had people, but it was, once you start working on a problem, you forget to be scared and you're just like, I'm going to solve this. Like I can do this. And you just keep digging and digging and digging. So
I love that story. And I find it really interesting and fascinating that you made the transition from being fairly technical into what you're doing now. So one of the things I really wanted to dig in with you, well, there's two things, but one is around ESG. I know you lead that for Cadera and you and I had a great conversation about it. You know, as I see ESG, it's a buzzword still. And if I'm a leader, I'm either really happy about it, maybe embracing it, or I'm scared to death, right? Or I still am not even quite sure what it is supposed to mean to me and my organization. Okay, I'll have other people take care of it, the things that we must do. So you have a real strong position on, you know, what it really can mean from an organizational standpoint, as well as an individual. So me as an individual, call me a consumer in this world, a participant, someone who lives here on this earth that we've been given as a gift. And so I feel that I really wanted you to share some of, you know, what ESG really means, and then how companies can really look at it. And particularly, we're going to get a little bit into, I think, the S space. I'd love for you to share some of those stories.
Yeah. So we're not too late to the game on ESG. I first heard the acronym when I was helping a client with a 5-year corporate strategy. It was a global publicly traded company. And the executive team said, we're going to have to build ESG into the strategy. And I said, what is that? And they said, we are going to have to figure that out. No one seems to know. This was several years ago. And then I kept this piece of paper where I just doodled, like, where do I think it's going? How does it fit together? Because, you know, I think strategically, I want everything to fit on a piece of paper and fit together. And so, you know, the rest of the world is a little bit ahead of the US, but I can break it down for you. ESG. G stands for governance. And just think, this is about your shareholders. Is your business going to be a going concern? Do you have a good board governance? Do you have transparency? What about cybersecurity, data security, all the things that a shareholder would care about? The S is you just kind of widen the aperture a little bit. Like, what about the people that our organization interacts with, whether it's our employees, workers' rights, workers in our supply chain, do they have access to clean water, things like that. But it's also about the communities in which we live. So that includes DE&I fits into S very squarely. It's one of the early things we saw here in S. And then social impact. So the philanthropy program that I stood up and run at Credera, that's in the S, right? And then E is the one that seems to be getting all the attention and confusion. That's environmental sustainability. And it's really five aspects to that. One is, greenhouse gases. That's, global warming. Everybody's, knows about that one, but it's also about water use. It's about waste and pollution, biodiversity and things like that. So every business, depending on your model, has different aspects of E that you're impacting or you can have a more positive impact on.
Thank you for that. I think you broke it down in a very easy way to understand and consume because it can seem really daunting. So let's put myself in the position of a leader right now. And then I want to put myself in the position of a person, me. And so as a leader of an organization, let's say it's got a global footprint, where do they even start to think about this and put it? And okay, how do they really think about it? You can argue a lot of companies are. And let's talk about this being a US company, since we talked about Europe might be a little bit more forward in this space. How do I start to prioritize and think about what I would need to put in place just to start?
That's the exact question that caused me to stand up the ESG practice here, is helping, just like you would with any strategy, break it down. Where do we start? Right. So if you don't have good governance in place, but we probably ought to start there. In environmental sustainability, that's the one that's getting more attention, and the reason that US companies are going to have to start paying closer attention. One, the SEC passed a new policy. It's being argued right now, so it's on hold, but it will probably go through, in which all publicly traded companies are going to have to report their emissions, and they're going to have to be auditable, just like your financials are reported and auditable. Okay. And so that creates a data problem, if you will. Like, how do we do this in a way that you can't do this on spreadsheets anymore? I think I read over 50% of Fortune 500 are still using spreadsheets to track their emissions, right? So that's not, how do you defend that when you're in an audit situation? So that's the other part of the ESG practice, because Credera does data and technology and transformation, all of that. You can think about probably 40, 50 systems inside of a large company that have the bits of data that need to be pulled together and run through the emission vectors and do the calculations and put into the reports that you report to the reporting body. So it's really just a big data project. And then, but then you still break it down, right? I've got a client right now, I think they have 36 data sources. We're not going to get all that in the first year. So, like, where can they just kind of continue with how they have been, and where can we start to, piece by piece in an agile way, start to automate, bring things into a data lake, and start to build out what they're going to need. The other interesting part is, like, even if you're not publicly traded and this SEC ruling won't affect you, your ability to sell your products and services are going to be impacted. And that's the part that's the most interesting to me is, if you do business now with a major global company, you're probably being asked about your commitment, about your measurements, because as a vendor to someone, you are part of their Scope 3 emissions. So if your
Oh,
emissions are going up,
wow.
theirs are going up. If yours are going down, theirs are going down. And so it matters now. And so one of the projects we did, when we implemented some emission tracking software, basically. You can start to rack and stack. You could see the vendors, like I'll pick on airlines, and you could see how much of that company's emissions were due to airline X versus airline Y. And then you can imagine what the next step might be, which is, well, let's have a policy that we don't fly airline Y, and that will immediately
Wow.
reduce our emissions. Well, you don't want to be airline Y, right? But you just say, it's like this, if then thing that starts happening. And I'm totally making this up to have a simple example, but let's say the airline says, our number, we all know it's fuel. First of all, well, fuel is number one.
Right.
Let's pretend it's catering. And they're like, well,
Okay.
hold on. I'm going to switch caterers and bring my emissions down. Right now, the caterer is like, wait a minute. It's the baker that I'm using. I'm going to switch bakeries. And the baker's like, wait a minute. It's the milk that I'm using. I'm going to switch dairies. And here we go. And so some dairy in Iowa all of a sudden is impacted because a Fortune 100 was trying to reduce their emissions by switching airlines. So, I mean, it's like it's
Wow.
interconnected. That's what's really interesting to me.
That's very interesting. So let me ask you something. When you work with a particular company, is part of the process, are you mapping that out? Like how they're like, I don't really know how you measure a company's carbon footprint today. I don't know. And
Climate
like
scientists do. There's like
climate
limits and
scientists.
factors, and how you convert everything to a common denominator. So regardless of the type of gas, it's converted to like a CO2 equivalent.
Okay.
And there's products that can help you do that. There's consultancies that help do that because it's constantly changing. The science is getting better, right?
So you're saying that a company then needs to just start with their governance.
If you were like ES. Just really starting with ESG, I mean, that's the first place you'd look, right? But honestly, most companies are already pretty solid right there, unless they haven't paid attention to security and data privacy, with data privacy being the most recent area to impact G.
So let me ask you, just because I'm curious, for, and I realize it's a general statement, but where do you think that a company can have the biggest bang for the buck impact? So it's the least, let's say, cost the least amount, let's say, you know, it has a bigger impact than other decisions they might make. Or maybe it's the ease of implementation based on the return that they're going to get. Are there any things that you see out there that, you know, are good success stories that you've seen, which might help companies think about where they would start?
Well, that's where it gets, there's not a one size fits all, because every company is a different business model, right? And so it just depends. Like if you're a grocer, then, well, maybe it has to do with your supply chain. Maybe it has to do with packaging. Maybe it has to do with waste at the end, you know, things you throw out. If you're a professional services firm like we are, our top two emissions are air travel and, by three facilities and commuting.
Yep.
So, I mean, this won't be popular, but there was a study came out, I think last week, that companies can reduce their, you know, emissions tied to commuting basically by 10%. Like if you just like allow a little bit of remote, work. So that's interesting. This like tension, I think, that's going to happen between return to office, getting people back into our city centers. I mean, because there's an economic reason for that too, right? Like you think about the vendors and the restaurants around, and like all the reasons, right? And then, you know, being together, we're more creative and all that. But then there's also, but that also increases our environmental footprint. And that's going to be important as well. So how do you balance those two things?
Mm-hmm. You know what? I agree with you. I think that companies need to take a bigger view, because there is that whole thing around remote versus in office. And, you know, I hate that we're even still continuing to have this conversation, but the number of people that are impacted in something, the harder it is to change. We all know that, right? So now we went from everybody's home to now we're, you know, having this thing about in or out. I do think that the balance is terrific. You know, so personally, we have people, we had them in twice a week. We do have them in three times a week, but not everybody, but we do. And then have a couple of days that they're working remote, because as a consultancy that I have here, there is that collaboration aspect. There's something to be said when we're around the table and we're working with our clients, even if they're virtual because of the eye contact and connection. But I think that it's a bigger picture. It's not just, are they in or are they out in productivity? But I think you got to be looking at the impact that we can have. We have a lot more people than we used to have, right, in this world. And we're commuting in a different way than we did. So anyway, I would agree with you on that. So let's bring it down to the individual level, because this is what always interests me. You know, what can I be doing differently? And gosh, Gail, I remember going to sustainability events back in the 90s, right? And the things that they were, you know, showing out in LA, because my sister lived in LA. And, you know, it's interesting that so many years later, because my daughter goes to big events around sustainability. In fact, she led sustainability at Georgia State, her college, you know, the sustainability effort there. And, it's interesting to me that the same products, services, talk track, the things that we were being told in the 90s, here are things that you can do, are the exact same things. I'm like, well, I knew about that and I was thinking something new. So what is it at the individual level that, you know, is or isn't happening, and how can people really think about it in a way that's real, right? So something that they can actually say, I can sign up for this.
Micro actions. I mean, really, it's really just more, I think, intentionality and awareness. Like if you just single use plastics. I mean, just start there. I asked one of my team members who helps lead the ESG practice. I said, how did you get started? And he said, I stopped using straws. Yeah. That was his first step. You know, there's metal straws, you don't have to use a straw. A straw causes wrinkles, by the way.
I don't use a straw, thank God.
So there you go. There's your motivation. But, and then just awareness. And once I became like aware of single use plastics, like, do I really need a plastic fork or will a metal one? I've noticed in grocery stores, even when they're giving samples now, they use a little paper version of a spoon. Mm-hmm. Little things like that. Like, okay, if you've got to use disposable plates, you're having to big party or whatever, don't go with styrofoam. It's going to, you know, stay around forever. Go with something biodegradable. I had some that were made out of like some kind of palm leaves or something, like leaves were beautiful.
Wow.
Holidays. Yeah. So like, they don't have to be ugly. Right.
Yep.
Just little tiny intentional things. I've got a broken keyboard sitting right here. My keyboard broke last week and I'm not going to throw it in the trash. I'm going to take it to an electronics recycling center. Like it's just little tiny steps. It's, I mean, there's bigger things, you know, we just did a whole climate week where every day at Credera, we had presentations on different ways. So whether it's meatless Mondays or, you know, commuting methods, which in Dallas, Texas, we all have a lot of options, but in Denver, apparently the city will subsidize you a cargo bike.
Wow.
So yeah, just say, I think just once you start paying attention, you'll see ways that you can take little micro steps. Yeah. And
I would think it would be
a little bit. Yeah.
I would think today, especially because of how advanced the internet is, and this leads us into our next topic, I would say is you probably can leverage the internet, some Google search and some other ways to basically understand how you as an individual can have an impact. I'm with you. It can start really small and just thinking about it very intentionally. Gosh, I even think about, not to diss any of these companies, but you talk about single-use plastics. I think about baggies, you know, like just there's so much that we don't, you know, that in our everyday life, we don't really think about that intentionally. And think about it over the course of a year, what a huge difference that can make. So I believe that I would be remiss. It was actually part of your talk track on your company, right? So strategy, transformation, data technology, and AI solutions. So I figure I'm going to talk to the source about AI. Talk to me a little bit about the vision that Credera has, that you have for how people can really be leveraging the technology and, you know, how you envision that looking over the next 5-10 years.
It is changing so fast. So, you know,
it's unbelievable, right?
Yeah. So we have a wonderful chief data scientist here at Credera, and he has a podcast. And I love visiting with him. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, Gail, AI has been around for a very long time. What do you think a pilot on an airplane is, right? So because it's the generative, you know, large language model. That's the thing that we have the step change. So let's be clear. I'm like, okay, fine. So the large language models, let's talk about that. So it is amazing. Every iteration, like every few weeks, it's like, it can do something else. It can do something else, right? So we're looking at, and we already are, leveraging one of the models to, when we're doing our engineering work, basically. So a lot of the repetitive tasks, a lot of the, you know, just if you're not even familiar with the language, it'll tell you what the code is doing and kind of point out the flaws, right? And so you can build test data sets and things with it. Like just all kinds of things that increase the efficiencies. I've got one of my teams actually measuring how much more efficient they are using it as a tool. I think right now, most of our clients are thinking of it as from an efficiency side, like where can we get those gains, right? I've had a client where they had a software product that was kind of complex to use. So they had to have a call center to kind of support users to, I don't want to go into too much. So it's an industrial kind of software, let me say.
Hey, yeah.
So basically in 2 weeks, we did a proof of concept where we trained a model to use natural language. And then that would help set the parameters for the software tool. The user could interface that way, right?
Wow.
It was incredible that with almost no information, the model could be trained. And it blew my mind. Then you think about marketing, right? I've seen so many examples. You know, I run two CMO forums here in Dallas, and AI has been the topic the last couple of meetings, and the examples of what people are doing with it. You can generate a ton of content, whether it's videos or every type of content. You can meta tag all your content. You can start to personalize and develop very personalized content, not just a persona, but like, okay, Gail and Michelle like exactly the same things, but if there's a tree in it, Gail's more likely to click. If there's a brick wall, Michelle's more likely to click. Okay, two pieces of content generated personally for us based on what it's learning about us, and then can push these things out in an omni-channel, right? So it's, I'm still just kind of getting my head around what all is possible. Like our chief data scientist showed me a demo the other day of something he built in literally a few minutes. You know how long it takes to make a video? We've talked about videos.
Okay. Yeah.
So he used different tools, right? He gave one his picture and said, create a Pixar version of me. Mm-hmm. He put a prompt into a large language model and said, write a funny script based on AI or something. I forgot what the topic was. And then he gave a little audio snippet of his voice. And then he threw another tool. And then minutes later is this Pixar looking guy giving a very funny speech in his voice, you know, a very high quality video. It cost a couple bucks and a few minutes.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question, which is like, what's the cost to entry? You know, I mean, I realize it can vary widely, but it seems like it's something that's pretty attainable to at least start to get your feet wet and understand what it is.
Mm-hmm. And there's companies, you know, setting up shop, you know, where they're actually using the same large language models, but they've got like a specialized way of doing it. So maybe you just want help editing, we can sell press releases. Like there's probably a company out there whose product is designed specifically to help you create and edit press releases using another large language model.
Right? So interesting. So I think it would be really cool to talk about, you know, we can share a couple stories here around how you're personally using AI and ChatGPT in your life, in your work, and I'll share a couple stories too, because I do think it's fascinating. I don't think you need to be afraid of it. I think that you just need to understand, you know, even though I say she helped me, it's just remembering that, you know, chatty as I call her, you can see what I'm using, you know, it's really not her, right? I just think we're probably at a point in our lives where we realize that and we can understand that and have a lot of fun with it. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you're leveraging it, like I said, personally, professionally.
Well, LinkedIn posts. You can have a model look at some good ones and then kind of learn your voice and help you write your own. Now I've noticed LinkedIn has added now an AI button.
I've been playing with that.
So easier than, you know, because it would add like these, what do they call emoticons and little things and the hashtags and all the stuff. Make my English much clearer.
I never understood the hashtag, but another story.
AI does. Someone sent me, I needed to read like this very dense white paper on DevOps. And I plugged it into a model and said, please summarize on the level of an eighth grader. You know, like, give me the themes, give me the stuff, just give me the gist of it. And then this weekend, we were talking about my long-term desire to serve on boards of directors. And I was working on a board resume and I've been kind of catatonic and it's a different kind of resume, right? And so I created like a 5,000 word prompt. I had to go look and had to figure out what a good board resume looks like. Then I fed it my examples. And then I fed it three different long version CVs that I've used for various things here at the firm. Right. And then I fed it two versions of my personal brand as I go. Right. And I fed it through several different models. I had five of them, actually like four or five laid out. And I'm like pulling all the best of it together, kind of wrote my own, ran it through another model. And I said, here's where we can make some improvements. I took its suggestions, a couple iterations, then took all that and put it to another model and said, write me a board resume as it were from scratch. And then so it took me, you know, a few hours, but it was better than starting with a blank sheet of paper. And I think it came out pretty well. And then I had to find something that would like format it for me. And I did find a company that uses AI formatting. So
that is really fantastic. Yeah. So I was using it a few weeks ago and it was really helpful. So there are certain types of, so I was looking for a workout plan, but I wanted a combination of weight training with cardio, the right mix of it, and then balance and stability, you know, and strength. So strength, cardio, balance, stability, right? And I read the book Outlive. I like Peter Attia. You know, that's a philosophy I can live with as far as like his thoughts on workouts and all. And I said, you know, through the lens of Peter Attia, like I'm entering all this stuff. Here's what I'm looking for. Well, first I asked for the workout, but I'm like 7 day a week workout, maybe one day of rest in there. You know, what could that look like? And I just kept prompting different questions. And I got to tell you something, Gail, I have an amazing workout schedule now. And I gave it to someone who was a personal trainer. And I said, okay, I entered this into chat. And then based on, you know, me wanting to get balance, stability, all this other stuff, here's what it came up with. And his feedback was, okay, that's really, really good. It's very well balanced. You're going to work out your whole body. And I was even asking stuff like, okay, can you give me a little more focus on, you know, upper body, heart, shoulders, back, whatever. But it ended up tailoring. And again, it probably took me a couple of hours, but it would have taken me days to come up with that. Seriously.
That reminds me, the first time I used ChatGPT, my book group, we've talked about my book group of 27 years. I was hosting, the book was The Power. And I said, I'm hosting a dinner party and it needs to be thematically with the, and by the end, and then I kept, you know, giving it more prompts. Well, I'm hoping a little more like Turkish, what it mixed in with that little. And then by the end, it's the recipes, the drinks, the playlist, decor, and it would even convert those recipes into a shopping list. Like,
Yes.
I planned the whole event using AI. I thought, well, because it's kind of a dystopian book, so why not let AI plan my party?
Very cool. I know, right? 1984, right? Here we are, right? It's like, yeah. Oh my God. I guess you can kind of look at it like an assistant, right? That's what I do today. And so I'm like you, I'm using it to look at annual reports, synthesizing that.
Yes,
10K. We're getting ready for client calls. Like it's, you know, tell me the top five things that I need to know about what's happened with this company over the last year. It is extremely helpful. And then, you know, all you have to do is validate, right? Validate, trust, read, of course, dig more into it, but it is definitely a time saver. In fact, I'm challenging my team to think through how it can help them be more efficient on their project work so that they'll have more time for the higher order problem solving and thinking work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it's interesting because when you think about consultants, they want to, at least, you know, from my perspective, I'm also a consultant from way back all the way to what I do now. And, you know, our tendency is to want to do everything, right? Do all the research. And I remember the days of doing the research around, you know, travel and where we were going to go. And it took so long. I still do all the research, but now with assistants. So I'm challenging our team to think about what you can let go and just validate so that you have time to do some of this higher order, more important stuff that is really high value to our clients. And I would believe you're probably doing the same thing.
Yeah, more thinking time. Yeah.
Really interesting. So I want to circle around back to your work a little bit. People have gotten to know you a little bit right now. And so, you know, talk to us about maybe some career highlight moments that are of interest to you that you'd like to share, maybe a story you'd like to share. Maybe it was a challenge that you faced, something that was led to a trajectory change, but just something that others can learn from.
Well, I've already mentioned when I discovered strategic planning was a huge inflection point, right? We know motherhood was a huge inflection point. We've talked over the years about some of the interesting work I got to do in strategy, which to me is the most fulfilling because you can see the imprints of it years later. You know, so I got to work with a division of NASA, the safety and mission assurance on strategy for manned space flight. And I'm starting to see aspects of that play out in the mission to Mars.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Now it's not, you know, my strategy, like I facilitated, right? But like you're in the room and you're pulling the information out and you're putting it together and pulling the information out of people whose job it is who know this stuff. I think we've talked before about like the Botswana, the strategy to have prosperity for all, and the Healthy Base Initiative, which is still going under a different name. I think it's Operation Livewell now, but some of the things we did to try to improve health outcomes for military members and their families that we hope would permeate to society. And you're starting to see it now with the Better For You Foods and some of the innovations that came out. One of the ideas from one of the innovation firms that was part of it was around having a mirror that could have your personal instructor in it. And of course, those are available on the market now. That was just a wild idea when it was on a flip chart many years ago. I feel so fortunate that I've, you know, all the places I wanted to go. I wanted to work inside the Pentagon. I got to work inside the Pentagon. It just feels like I had this like wonderful, wonderful list. And we've talked about like my career up through the Balanced Scorecard Institute, and then I made the pivot back to get back into technology, and then specifically back at Credera. I was kind of driven to do that. Couldn't really tell you why exactly, other than I knew I wanted it, and I wanted to be a partner in a consulting firm from the minute I graduated college, when I found out what that was. But in the pivot, I had a bit of an identity crisis. Because I went from, you know, traveling the world, being in the boardroom, you know, leading these strategy sessions, company after company or organization after organization. And what we do now is a lot of technology. So leading a lot of technology engagements, looking at, you know, transformation and all that. And, you know, because I've written a textbook on strategy and my whole personal brand was about strategy. And the identity crisis became, well, now who am I? So who is Gail? I kind of get the essence of, and Michelle, you have talked about before, like when I'm thinking about it or advising people to think about jobs, like don't think about the job itself, think about the attributes of the job. And that will kind of help drive you, whether it's you need, you know, flexibility, freedom, travel, you know, challenges, whatever it is, right?
Yep.
And so that's kind of how I went down this personal brand path to kind of figure out who am I that will continue to guide me as I move into these next chapters, and then I can explain myself to others that, you know, I want to work with. So that's sort
of let's talk about that a little bit. I think that probably more than one person in their life has hit an identity crisis. So, you know, like me myself, I left consulting to start my own string of retail stores, if you will. And it was an Italian franchise brought to the United States. When I made the decision to step away from that after 12 years, it was like, and now what? So tell me about, and we discussed this, and I would love for you to share with everyone listening, you know, just what that journey was like and how you went about identifying it, and you still are, right? How you are defining and redefining your personal brand.
Yeah, it's been a journey. I bought books, went to seminars, asked my friends in the CMO forum who do marketing for a living, you know, asked my own marketing team to try to, it's kind of hard to describe yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Hard to talk. In fact, this podcast is hard because I'm talking about myself, right? Can I just read you the four bullets that all of these people plus a lot of AI has landed on?
I think that would be great. Yes.
Not necessarily perfect, but I think it's closer. I'm known for breaking barriers and driving change with courageous steadiness and quiet strength. So that taps into, you know, female engineer, first female partner, you know, only woman in the room most of my career. And just never giving up. Of course, have expertise in tackling complex problems and crafting impactful strategies. That's what I've continued to do and have done. passionate about advancing organizations and fostering value creation through sustainable practices. And I'm an avid lifelong learner, AKA book group, and constantly evolving. Yeah. So avid lifelong learner, delving into the vast realm of business from its historical narratives to cutting edge innovations. I'm fascinated by business. I cannot watch enough business, you know, history shows or history, business history books or reading about innovations. I am drawn to and fascinated by business.
So tell me, okay, so that's, it's first of all, like I'm going, wow, that's like an impressive personal brand. It seems like a lot of thought went into it. You talked about there were like different tentacles and different ways that you went out to get that by getting feedback from others, looking at your past, taking some and you know, internal view of yourself. So how, if someone's thinking about they're having that identity crisis or they're looking at, gosh, maybe I've never even really thought about my personal brand before. How did you really start? You know, I mean, you can buy branding books, right? And it says, start with, you know, who you are, or, you know, what's your why, right? Like you can start like that, but how did you really start? And, you know, like something that is concrete, just here's the path I took, doesn't mean it's the path others would take, but how do you really face that? Because it can seem daunting and it can also to others seem like, you know, something that's not very concrete, if you will.
Unfortunately, it's not, it wasn't straight. It was sort of like, oh, I started my own business. I have a personal brand. I went to a seminar and there was a book and a workbook, and it still pings me that I haven't finished my homework, you know, 4 years later, because I couldn't, I just couldn't. But part of that was asking others to describe me. One of the assignments was ask various people who know you in professional and personal settings to describe the essence of you, right? And the value you bring and what they value about you. And so I started looking for themes there and what seemed true or not true. A lot of kind of soul searching on what do I want to be known for, or what thread has always been true that either drives me or feels positive. You know, I kept running it through different people. And then of course AI, but people was really, really what helped me get to it. And I will say AI helped with the bullet points so for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just kept reading and massaging. And the final pass, so the fourth bullet got added, I asked my partner, Steve, I said, is this me? He had no idea I've been on this journey. I don't tell him everything, right? No idea. And I explained what a personal brand is, and it's like, is this me? And that avid lifelong learner part, he came up with over dinner, and I plugged into AI and it came out way better than what either I was, but I knew what he was saying. And it's like, well, yeah, that is the other part of me. I'm always reading, always learning. It's always about business.
You know, it's funny because we talked about if we lived in the same city, we'd be like,
girlfriends,
coffee together and be girlfriends and having fun. But I think that's fascinating. And I think one of the lessons that you're giving to people is just start. And I think that it doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it can be continuously evolving. I started this exercise. So I read Principles by Ray Dalio, and I gave a copy of that to everyone on my team. And, you know, it's just about his life principles and work principles. And I started writing those principles down, and some of them were more aspirational, right? And I'm thinking, okay, these are principles I want my kids to know about too, right? And I kept ripping them out and, you know, starting over and ripping them out. And the sad part about it is I was putting them in this handmade book that my mom made for me, right? With all these little, like she handed this book and put it all together. And I realized I haven't left myself much pages, you know, to write down my principles because I kept ripping them out. So I'm like, wait a minute. I'm trying to be perfect about this. And really, it doesn't have to be perfect because we're not, right? So it's just a matter of I'm always about, you know, continuous improvement and accepting where I am, being true to myself, right? And then when I kind of relax a little bit, like I'm not writing this book, you know, that I'm expecting to be on I don't know, the New York Times bestseller, but it's just, you know, it's life. And life can be messy and take different turns, can it?
Yes, life can be messy. Yes.
I mean, it just can. So
it's so easy when you get, you know, to like, we're, I think we're both kind of hitting our stride, you know, and it's really easy. Oh yeah, it was a really straightforward path to get here. Like, no, we had no idea where we were going.
It's like, I know it.
I think we had an idea where we wanted to be.
I know. I'm telling you, you know, what I'm learning as I get older is that I totally understand that whole saying about, you know, youth is wasted on the young, because I always thought I was too old. At 30, I thought I was too old to make some dramatic changes in my life. I make more change now at this point in my life than ever before. And I kind of run to it because I think it's really exciting and fun and feel like, you know, I'm hitting my stride too, just like you. It's pretty, pretty interesting.
There's our book title. That's our book title, Hitting Our Stride.
Hitting Our Stride. I'm in if you're in.
I'm in.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm in.
Good one. So I, and talking about that, hitting your stride, you just shared with us one of your big wheel moments around your personal branding and your identity crisis that you faced. Anything else you'd like to share around something that was pivotal for you that you'd like to share with others?
Work-wise, probably not. The other, I don't know if I mentioned this already in this podcast or not, but my daughter, locking eyes with my daughter, and not, she stared me down the minute she was born, put into my, and just didn't break her gaze. I thought, oh, wow, you are
wow.
A teacher and you are going to change my life in ways that I certainly have not anticipated. And I've integrated, and you should be integrated in my life. I had no idea how deeply I was fortunate to be able to integrate her into my work, into my travels, into like, she has grown up to be my best friend and confidant, and she's an incredibly powerful woman. She is a lawyer. She calls me every morning and every night, and we talk business.
Wow.
Is just wonderful. I mean, we do other things, like we brunch.
Yeah, but yeah, that's so cool though.
5 days a week, twice a day, we talk business. And like, what a legacy. Is I think about, you know, how things have changed. And, you know, one of my teams asked me the other day, like, what did you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, well, I don't need to be, you know, a downer, but that really wasn't an option. Like I could be a mom or maybe a teacher, right? And so now the world is opening, and just this legacy of business and professional career can be handed down from woman to woman. Like, that to me is amazing.
It really is, isn't it? You know, I was thinking about this. You know, we were in Nashville. That's where it was, and I was running around the park. In just outside of the downtown area, and they had this huge bronze statue, right? And it was all these women that had made impact. And I thought about it, and I thought, it wasn't that long ago that even in the U.S. that women didn't vote. I mean, if you think about it, it really wasn't that long ago. And look at how far things have come. I love that I can truly say to my daughters, if there's something that you don't accomplish, it's on you, because you have the opportunity now. It's pretty amazing. There's like no excuses.
I was at Old City Park earlier this week, and I took a picture of, there was a sign, and it's one of the historic houses there.
Yeah.
Said a woman has registered to vote. A woman who lives in this house has registered to vote. It was a former home of a suffragette. And I took a picture of that, because you're right, it hadn't been that long ago. It hadn't been that long ago that women couldn't have bank accounts. Like my mother, after I was born, that women could work, but you couldn't have your own bank account. You could get a loan if a man co-signed for you, but you were going to pay a higher interest rate. I mean, all of that has changed in my lifetime, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting, because, and then, you know, when you look at society around us, it's like the norm. So in other words, I the women before us had to deal with the hurdle of it, right? But like for me, I feel my generation and certainly my children, they don't even, well, my children don't even understand it, right? I mean, heck, they're hitting their dad up for their own bank account at 13, right? He's like, no. But anyway.
It's a right. It is a right.
It's a right. Yes. I think that's pretty amazing. So I want to ask you something about, you know, as you think about the world and what's important to you 5, 10 years from now and yourself, where do you want to be, Gail? What are you thinking about?
Well, there's the what I'm doing and then there's the what impact I'm having. So, you know, what am I doing? What is the next chapter? I mentioned I want to serve on boards of directors. I think with a consulting background, how many businesses I've seen, the strategy background, you add the ESG, and let's be honest, being able to check the female box, I think I might have a chance. I can create value. I'm really trying to figure that out. I think that would be also be interesting. Like I really love digging into business, right? So that sounds like the perfect next chapter. And in fact, I can actually do that while I work here. I've already spoken to our CEO, so we're all clear. I'm not trying to moonlight. And I also want to get back to teaching. I really enjoyed executive education, teaching strategy to executives. I guest lecture at universities when I'm privileged to be asked. I want to somehow weave teaching and I guess advising in terms of boards into my future. As I think about, you know, impact, I'm getting such joy out of coaching and mentoring others now, especially yes. Women. At Credera, I sponsor Women in Engineering, which is one of our ERGs. And I think I heard the average age of our employee is like 27 or maybe 24. It was really young. And, you know, to me, very young. And it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's our kids' age. Yeah.
It's our kids' age, right, right. So I'm like, but seeing that I know things, right? And I can help them navigate and I can help them understand and help them empower them to control their careers and their trajectories. And so I want to keep doing that through the Credera's Community Impact Program, which is our social philanthropy program that I stood up. It's to help people who are circumstantially blocked, specifically in STEM awareness and education and access, because, you know, we benefit from STEM, right? And that's a huge, still a huge need, I think, in the US, particularly for first generation or, you know, women. And then I'm kind of super stoked. There's this, what's it called? The STEM Opportunity Alliance. It's a White House initiative. I was actually invited to an event yesterday and I couldn't go because I helped with a strategic planning session that they had, but it's around STEM equity across the US. So it's like a major program. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested in the things that'll help lift others up, but particularly in, you know, like being able to get the education that people, if they want to be able to get the careers that they want to drive the lives that people may want. Right. I'm not saying this for everybody, but it's super important to me.
You know, I think it's interesting from the perspective of, I know what a busy life you have. I mean, we talked about just trying to schedule, you know, us getting together and I got a busy life, but you know, part of that whole care and feeding of yourself, right? Now, my mom always reminds me, Michelle, you got to take care of yourself because nobody else will. It's also planning and thinking about what's ahead for you and, you know, just keeping your eye on those aspirational things in your life. To me, they're important. And I think we deserve to give that to ourselves as well.
Yeah. Lifting our head up and lifting the gaze and looking ahead.
Yep. So I wanted you to share a personal story that I thought was kind of fun. You're always up for a challenge. You're always learning. You're always aspirational and you're on a farm. Are you not?
I am on a farm.
So we were having an interesting conversation about one of your aspirational goals for some, what do we call this, wildlife on your farm that you wanted to, you know, kind of bring to life. So talk to us a little bit about that story and what you've learned from that.
Okay, so my mom says I'm a critter tamer.
Critter tamer. You're like the dog whisperer, but you're the critter tamer.
Mm-hmm. Typically with birds. But we have wild Canadian geese that come through here every year. And 4 years ago, exactly, May 2021, I decided I really wanted to touch one of these geese. I wanted them to live on the farm. I want goslings. I want the whole thing, right? And so I've been very diligent, especially this year, spending hours sitting outside, trying to get them used to my presence down by the pond. You know, you can do a lot of thinking and reading when you're down there. And cut to the chase. Yesterday, I heard a bunch of honking, and I haven't been able to get within. It got to where I could get within like 12 feet of them, maybe, because they realized I was going to bring corn when they're at the pond. But yesterday, I heard some honking. And I heard some tapping, and they were tapping on my kitchen windows. My windows are floor to ceiling. And I went outside, and of course they scattered a little bit, but I gave them some corn. This morning, honking, tapping, I go outside and I bend down with my hand, and they began eating out of my hand. And I was
unbelievable.
I had to scrape the neck, and it's like, I know, it's silly, but it's like, I don't know. I think the lesson there is like, play the long game and show no fear.
Wow.
They're really bigger than I thought when I got up close.
That's pretty amazing. So I don't think we can beat play the long game and show no fear. So with that, I'd like to wrap. I think today, and I have had such a wonderful time talking to you. We can always talk and talk, and we do, right? So I don't know how I would love to have you back as a guest again, Gail. I so appreciate you sharing some of your insights, just about what it's like to be a woman in business, the ESG angle, how we can embrace AI, and certainly about the value of playing the long game. So thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. I really appreciate it. And you keep riding the big wheel.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback, and as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life.